Psychology, a Winning Program has been good for me this past year, and I hope it will have an impact on your life too. We've produced this single cassette especially for you. The ball game is changing. The international rules are different. The players are more intense, more demanding, and the stakes are higher. But the fundamentals remain the same, and I'd like to share with you an update in the fundamentals of high-performance achievement. It's our way of bringing you new discoveries and research insights into behavioral psychology as they're announced to support and strengthen your current knowledge. Since it is the Super Bowl every day, let's update our game plan with new inputs on the psychology of winning, and let's play to win in the 1980s. There are three fundamental principles that are critical elements in the winning attitude for the 1980s. The first fundamental principle is that optimism is vital for survival and success. And let me repeat that. The first fundamental principle is that optimism is vital for survival and success. Optimism in the winner is positive self-expectancy. And self-expectancy is the self-fulfilling prophecy. It's the idea that that which you fear or expect most will likely come to pass. The body manifests what the mind harbors. True self-expectancy is synonymous with commitment, with purpose, faith, obsession, a burning desire. It is the single most outwardly identifiable trait demonstrated by a winning human being. Positive self-expectancy is pure and simple optimism in the face of all odds. Self-expectancy is the key to motivation. It takes the words, pictures, and emotions of imagination and fuses them into energy and action by commitment. Winners have positive self-expectancy, which creates desire. They are dissatisfied with the status quo. They want change for the better. There never was a real winner in life who didn't want and expect to win. Losers generally expect such occurrences as a loss of a job, financial problems, a dull evening, poor service, and failure. Most importantly, losers expect to feel bad and get sick, and they do. One of the leading authorities in the world today on the self-expectancy relationship between mind and body is Dr. Herbert Benson, Associate Professor of Medicine at the Harvard Medical School. He is the author of the best-selling book, The Relaxation Response, and his more recent work, The Mind-Body Effect, documents the emotional relationship to many diseases. In The Mind-Body Effect, Benson brilliantly explains the close interrelation between your mind and body, in which thought processes lead both to disease and to good health. The concept of voodoo death is the extreme example of the potential negative effects of the mind on the body. Voodoo, as we have come to understand it, is a set of religious practices said to have originated in Africa as a form of ancestor worship. Among Australian Aboriginal tribes, witch doctors practiced the custom of pointing the bone, whereby a magic spell was cast into the spirit of the victim. The purpose of such spells was to disturb the spirit of the victim so that disease and death would ensue. The many instances of such death were dependent both upon the victim's awareness of the spell cast and the victim's strong adherence to his society's belief systems. And so voodoo is negative self-expectancy, or the ultimate in pessimism. The power of the self-fulfilling prophecy is one of the most amazing phenomena of human nature. The winner in life, believing in the self-fulfilling prophecy, keeps his or her momentum upward by expecting a better job, good health, financial gain, warm friendships, and success. The winner sees problems as opportunities to challenge ability and determination. The equal but opposite force in the self-fulfilling prophecy to voodoo is optimism. Winning self-expectancy and optimism remind me a lot of Willie Stargell. Willie Stargell is one of the most inspirational baseball players in the game. As the captain and head motivator of the world champion Pittsburgh Pirates, he always has an encouraging word for the rest of the team. After the Pittsburgh Pirates won the World Series in 1979, I watched Willie being interviewed on a national television program. The commentator asked Stargell, "How is it that you approach everything you do with such enthusiasm, as if you were still playing sandlot ball again?" And Willie replied happily, "Well, life is a fantastic game and you gotta flow with it. You gotta be happy every day." The newscaster questioned, "But isn't there a lot of tension and pressure in the World Series? Isn't it really one of the real tough times? And isn't it really like any other tough, pressure-filled job?" "Heck no," replied Willie. "It's just a lot of fun, and we always go out there to have fun every day." He said, "Have you ever heard the umpire start a game by saying, 'Work ball'?" "Of course not. They always say, 'Play ball.' And that's exactly what they mean. Let's go play." My friend Zig Ziglar, who's one of the top platform speakers and motivators in the country, defines an optimist in a way that always makes me smile. Zig Ziglar said, "An optimist is a person who'd go after Moby Dick in a rowboat and take the tartar sauce along with him." Another friend and respected colleague of mine is Dr. Robert Schuller, founder of the Garden Grove Community Church and one of the most positive men in the country, speaking to 100 million TV viewers worldwide each week on his Hour of Power show about possibility thinking. Three of his most recent quotes that I like the best are that money flows toward great ideas. Money flows toward great ideas. And second, we don't have a money crisis or even an energy crisis. We've got an idea crisis. And third, you have to see the possibility to begin anything. And beginning is half done. I like that one. You have to see the possibility to begin anything, and beginning is half done. You know, it's amazing and sometimes painfully true that people shy away from negative, pessimistic, unbelieving losers. They gravitate to positive, self-assured, optimistic winners. Optimism is like a forest fire. You can smell it for miles before you can see it burning. Optimism is like flypaper. You can't help getting stuck to it. But more than positive thinking, how to win friends and influence people, the deep hypnotic power within you, Pollyanna, and everything is beautiful, baby. Recent discoveries about the brain have gripped both the public and scientific imagination and relate directly to this theory of why optimism is one of the single most important traits in a winning human being. These discoveries are in processes in the body which produce morphine-like substances naturally. In other words, God created substances which operate on specific receptor sites in the brain and spinal cord. These naturally produced substances appear to reduce the experience of pain and also in part cause the organism to feel better. The discovery of these internal opiates, or endorphins, that's E-N-D-O-R-P-H-I-N-S, these endorphins secreted and used by the brain may be the beginning of a breakthrough to understanding joy and depression. Optimists may feel better about themselves simply because of substances they have created by their own optimistic thoughts. Presumably, the substances help people screen out unpleasant stimuli. Since the beginning of time, man has tried to create his own external stimuli for optimism. Opium has been widely used, at least since classical Greek days and probably before. Other substances such as alcohol, cocaine, and more recently synthesized artificial substances such as morphine and LSD have had effects on the experience of large numbers of people. In his new book, Optimism, The Biology of Hope, Dr. Lionel Tiger makes a strong case for the possibility that there is a location in the brain for creating good feelings about the present and the future. Dr. Tiger suggests that we have developed this capability in our internal pharmacy ever since prehistoric times, when as hunters we optimistically entertained the idea of the successful hunt. He suggests that perhaps people who are pessimistic or depressed may look to external means to try to cure their depression with a variety of weapons, blood tonics, huge doses of vitamins, alcohol, sessions with psychiatrists and interior decorators, vacations, marijuana, Valium, cocaine, shopping sprees, and movies. I tend to agree with Dr. Tiger that optimism is the natural biology of hope, and I'm equally excited about the discovery of the natural internal opiates, which appear to be stronger than any morphine-based or man-made substance. Evidence is building up that optimistic self-expectancy creates a natural high to help winners withstand pain, overcome depression, turn stress into energy, and persist. It has even been proven that women who have gone into labor during the process of childbirth secrete these marvelous natural opiates called endorphins to help them get through a painful process toward a desirable event such as giving birth to their baby. Since it appears to be the natural thing to do, why not expect yourself to win in life? When people ask you about the recession, tell them you've decided not to participate. When they ask you about inflation, tell them your goal is to conserve more and earn more, and that the value of your home is growing too. When they ask you about your answer to the world crisis, tell them you're working harder to set a good example for your family, for your employees and your neighbors, and that you're getting your own lifestyle in order. And when asked why you're so darned enthusiastic about life, tell them you've discovered a new drug called endorphin that's not on the market. It flows naturally from within to the optimists. Get it in the 1980s. It's the first ingredient for winning. Remember, number one, optimism is vital for survival and success. The second fundamental principle for the 1980s is that crisis sparks opportunity and stress is the normal winning condition. Let me repeat that. The second fundamental principle for the 1980s is that crisis sparks opportunity and stress is the normal winning condition. One of the most glaring reasons why we have such a difficult time in seeing the abundance of potential for our own lives in the 1980s that enables us to be real winners is the fact that all media are bombarding us with the wrongdoings of society rather than the right doings. ABC newscaster Paul Harvey, with whom I've had the pleasure of sharing the platform, admits that he's ashamed of the way that the news of the world is portrayed on a daily basis to individuals in our society, with all the focus on deviant behavior rather than on what's happening right. And so the focus of our daily conversation is on Tehran, Afghanistan, inflation, recession, strikes, boycotts, violence, crime, traffic accidents, and airplane crashes. Paul Harvey suggests that the reason we as individuals are so morbidly curious whenever we read about human indignities is that we're glad we weren't the victims, and so bad news becomes good news in reverse. And so by reading and talking and viewing the tragedies of others, we are somehow able to justify our own frustrations in life. By the time children reach age 5 today, they've been subjected to some 3,000 hours of television programming. If a commercial can get you to buy a new toy, you can believe that the rest of the show can get you to buy a losing lifestyle as a normal way of life. By concentrating on what is wrong with society, we find ourselves unable to spend much time thinking about what we're doing right or what we can do right. We become depressed. We lose our real incentives and excitement about life. We spend much of our time gleefully predicting the coming of the end. In developing our psychology of winning for the 1980s, our self-honesty needs to tell us that right now, this is the best time to be living in society. First of all, it is our lifetime. And there's more opportunity today and in our foreseeable lifetimes than in any other time in history. We have managed to conquer most of the infectious diseases that can destroy and attack our lives from the outside. Through nutritional, medical, surgical, and pharmaceutical intervention, we have been able to increase our lifespan well beyond 70 years. And the prospects look good for pushing this average lifespan toward 80 years and beyond in the next decade.